You're listening to The Weather Junkies.
Oh boy.
Large wedge tornado coming up in 2 hours.
A winter storm warning is in effect for our area.
We can expect at least another 2 to 4 inches for the night.
The National Weather Service in Huntsville has issued a tornado warning for northwestern Massachusetts.
14 to 22 inches of snow!
Good Thursday evening, and welcome to this edition of The Weather Junkies. I'm Tyler Jankowski, joining the show from Connecticut, as always, and tonight we are joined by my counterpart, Dakota Smith from Colorado. Dakota.
Hey, Tyler, and thanks everyone for joining us tonight. It's going to be a great show. But just to talk about our weather for a second here, I'm in the lap of luxury right now. Sunny skies, upper 60s, lower 70s, pretty calm winds. I can't complain out here, but I'm pretty sure in the Northeast, you guys are a bit chilly right now. Is that correct?
We are chilly, yes. We've had a winter-like start to April. Kind of got excited with the 70s and 80s in March, and now everyone is wondering what the heck is going on. We have had a lot of snow, though. It's actually the fifth snowiest April on record, so just crazy weather. It was the warmest winter on record, and now we have the fifth snowiest April, which doesn't mean a whole lot in terms of numbers. I mean, yeah. It's 6.9 inches of snow, but we had 2 days in a row with actually two separate snowstorms. Now, in the weather record, you can't actually figure out what's a separate snowstorm, but this year we can actually confirm that Sunday we had one snowstorm and then another on Tuesday, and both delivered about 3 inches at the observing site. So it was unprecedented, actually. We kind of thought the roads would be wet during the day, especially in the afternoon. The snow picked up and actually covered over the roads at 3 o'clock in the afternoon on, what was it, April 4th or 5th. So it was unprecedented for that type of snow to stick in the afternoon in April. But
yeah. But
snow in April, we do normally get at least one occurrence in April. So that part of it is fairly common. But the amount of snow has gone up pretty quickly, as I said, fifth snowiest. So,
So we're joined tonight by Devin Boyer, and he's actually out in the Northeast as well. Devin, welcome to the show, and what kind of weather have you been experiencing the past few days?
Thanks, Dakota. Glad to be here. I mean, it's probably been pretty similar to Tyler. You know, we're only 100-some miles apart there.
Yeah.
We also had some snow early in the week. Not sure exactly how much, but a couple inches. We did have the same thing. It managed to cover, you know, the pavement, which was pretty interesting. And then today, just a lot of rain and some wind all day. I saw there was a severe thunderstorm warning out in near Albany, New York, which was kind of surprising in a way. But
yeah.
There was a lot of wind.
It's a potpourri of weather out there.
Yes.
The past few days.
As you would expect in early spring, I guess.
Yeah. So you're a software engineer in the energy group at the Weather Company, formerly known as WSI, and you're out in Massachusetts, and you got your degree in meteorology at Penn State. And so before we get into the tweets, we just wanted to know a few things about what you do at the Weather Company and how you're liking it.
Sure. So like you said, I'm a software engineer in the energy group. And so the energy group serves really two distinct but related groups of people. It serves meteorologists that work at energy trading companies, as well as the energy traders themselves, who may have a little less experience in the exact meteorology. You know, they may not be able to read a 500 millibar map quite as expertly as a meteorologist, but they certainly are just as interested in the weather, and especially, you know, temperature is kind of the big market driver for energy prices. So what I do is help to create products that kind of both groups can use to help use weather to make trade decisions.
Gotcha. And you've been in that position for almost two years now?
Yeah, just under 2 years. I started back in June of 2014.
Gotcha. Very cool. Well, we're going to dive into that even more after our tweet section. But let's get into the tweets of the week. And our first one, this is actually a new thing for us. Our first one's actually from Devin. So Devin, I don't know if you have the tweet in front of you, but I was wondering if you could tell us about it and what you thought about it.
Sure. I can, let me pull it up here. I can
enter the tweet just to start.
Okay, that's probably.
Yeah, it's from Noah Bergeron. I think that's right. He's a Penn State meteorology student right now, and his tweet says golf course conditions have taken a hit in the Northeast after an early start for most, and warmer weather likely holds off until April. So I think you were telling me how you thought this was kind of a weird coincidence. You know, ski places can't stay open, but now golf courses can't open on time, I guess.
Right, that was kind of exactly what I thought when I read it there, is that, you know, it's kind of been bad for any sort of outdoor activities all year, basically. All of 2016, you had the ski seasons, as you guys have discussed several times on the show already. They've had a very shortened year with the lack of snow and winter, and now we get into spring, and it's affecting golf season by having snow and cold weather.
Yeah, and on a similar token, it was warm early, and a lot of flowers came out. The daffodils bloomed, and then we got the snow, and now all the daffodils have basically succumbed to the cold and the snow. So it's like a perfect storm for shutting things down and killing things. I know here in Connecticut there's a daffodil festival that usually takes place, I think, late April, if not late April, early May, and there's just no way that the daffodils are going to be around for the daffodil festival. So the Mother Nature has not been very forgiving.
Yeah, it's been quite the winter season. I'm hoping you guys get warm, because it just seems silly to be cold in the spring when you're not going to get any snow out of it, you know.
Well, I mean, at least we have gotten a little snow. I do. I agree. If it's going to be cold, I want snow. So.
Yeah. So on to our next tweet, and this was a pretty controversial one today. It came from Eric. Help me with the name here, Tyler. Do you know his Hothalus? I don't know how to say it.
Holthouse? I don't know.
Okay. Well. Anyways, you probably know him because he tweets.
We've had him on the show before, yes.
What?
We had a tweet from him.
Oh, yeah, we did. Yeah, we did. And this tweet said, meteorologists are old, white, and overwhelmingly male. No wonder many don't believe in human-driven climate change. And oh, my God, what a terrible tweet. First of all, it was a major backlash from meteorologists across the board. But honestly, I read the article. It's about why meteorologists doubt humans are the main contributor or a dominant cause of climate change. And the article is really good. I there are parts of it that really were informative, and I learned a lot. But just the broad brush of that tweet that, you know, all meteorologists are old, white, and male. I mean, it's fair to say that the majority of them are white. That's pretty much a fact, and that's a problem that, you know, AMS and other groups are trying to fix, you know, getting more diversity into our field. But I just thought the broad brush statement was rough, and it's a kind of a divisive thing to say. I don't know. I don't know if you guys saw any of the back and forth today, but it was pretty bad on Twitter.
I saw the tweet initially, and I was like, oh.
Yeah.
I think to a large degree, he's correct, but I didn't click on the link because I feel like a lot of the things he puts out are of a similar nature, and I just didn't really have time to have that in my day. But I do, you know, I see his point.
Well, I would suggest reading the article because I think the tweet was just to get clicks and stuff. The article was actually well done, I thought, and I learned some things from it. But I just thought the way he put it out there was just not
well. He has a track record of doing things that turn heads in the meteorological community. So who knows? Maybe it's successful.
Yeah, unfortunately, it's all about the clicks these days.
Yeah.
Yeah, he did something similar, I think, with the... I think it was that snowstorm, the big snowstorm in January, and he, you know, compared it to Sandy, and people got freaked out that the subways were going to be flooded, and, yeah. But anyways...
Yeah, we have a response to that tweet from a former guest on the Weather Junkies. Becky Elliott, a meteorologist at AccuWeather, says, honestly, that statement is pretty offensive to many meteorologists. Totally broad-brushing the field, unacceptable. So that was one response to her to Eric's tweet, and she got a lot of responses, including, it looks like, from Janice Dean, who's a senior meteorologist at Fox News Channel. So looks like this is quite a conversation on Twitter today.
Yeah, I actually missed it. I came in after the fact and, you know, was reading all these back and forths and, yeah, and whether...
One guy that I respect in Maine, Mike Haggett, he has some very good information. He responded to Becky and said, glad I unfollowed that years ago, so, and got five likes, I should say. So it looks like there were some pretty strong opinions that may have resulted in unfollowing over just a tweet in a story. Yeah. So.
Yeah, whether Twitter is weird. It can get feisty. It can be great.
And we're kind of approaching the off season, so.
Yeah, no snowstorms. That's usually a big divisive topic between, you know, snow lovers. But let's move on to our next tweet. And our last tweet, actually, it's from Dennis Mercereau, and you can follow him at WXDam. He writes for Mental Floss, actually, and used to write for Gawker, The Vane. His tweet said, I wrote a thing, hashtag wedges, and his tweet is all about Fujita. Sorry. Silent J's. I never know when to do it, but yeah. I feel like I never say the
sounds actual... like Taco Bell.
Yeah. Anyways, he wrote all about the scale. It's the scale that rates tornadoes from 0 to 5, and he talked about the enhanced version. And to me, the most interesting part about this was. And the main reason it was enhanced was to factor in construction standards because, you know, a certain mile-per-hour wind speed will take out a house made, I don't know, before 1950, but a house made now is probably built a little better and can withstand stronger winds. So it was a great read. I suggest it. He writes for Mental Floss, and you can see it on our Twitter also.
So that does it for this week's Trending in the Weather Twitterverse. Next we have our main topic, right, Dakota?
Yeah. Yeah, so let's get into this. We're joined by Devin today, and as we said earlier, he's a software engineer at the Weather Company. And I wanted to start, Devin, with kind of the track you took after you got your meteorology degree. Obviously, you were entrenched in computer science at Penn State. Just from knowing you, I know you were always working on a project, either with the weather, campus weather service, or something of your own. So how did the skills you learned in meteorology kind of translate to something that is more computer science based? And what was that like? What was that transition like?
Well, it was... I have to think about that for a sec. It was a good transition, I think. Certainly, getting into a field that is a little different than like most other types of meteorology, like forecasting any sort of thing, whether you're a broadcast meteorologist or something else. It's a little different there, but I've definitely been able to use my meteorology skills. With that, so I think I've been able to transition. I'm sorry if this isn't coming out right, but I was definitely able to transition well and apply kind of both the computer science skills I had already known as well as some of the meteorology to kind of different problems that people that don't have the meteorology background, even in my group, may have had a harder time with.
Well, I'd like to add to those that are listening, I couldn't be more proud of the work that we did together at Campus Weather Service at Penn State. Everything from a group effort, the live broadcast team, the social media team, on your end more so, the website, and all these different things that we put together to automate certain things. We did a heck of a job innovating what we were doing at Campus Weather Service, putting on live severe weather broadcasts and making it work with the website and social media and all these different things. And the reason I say that is because some of that, I would say, is lacking from what I am doing right now, and I would love to have more of what we were doing. It was just, you know, we were free to do whatever we wanted, and I think we did a great job, and I think it's pretty nice that you were able to turn that into a very nice career at a company that everyone knows. For me, before we get deep into any one subject, tell us what you do perhaps on a daily basis or just what you do for your primary job. Because I am not sure myself, even though, you know, we are friends outside of the show, and I just am not familiar. So enlighten us.
Sure. So it can vary depending on what project I'm working on. So for instance, right now, I'm not really using my weather skills at all. We're moving to the cloud infrastructure. So you've probably seen all the ads for the various cloud companies out there. So sometimes I'm working on projects like that. There was a project I did back in December where I was involved in basically rewriting a model that we had for what are called gas-weighted degree days. So you're probably familiar with like heating degree days. So in the energy business, they weight them based on region and based on like fuel type. So if you get if you are getting your fuel from natural gas versus oil versus something else, and so I was primarily tasked with rewriting that model. The government agency had made some changes to some of their definitions there, and we just needed to clean up our code base. So sometimes it's things like that, you know, helping, you know, just cleaning up old code bases and implementing changes. One of my first projects there, which I'm sure Tyler you're familiar with, was the model lab.
Yes, I was going to bring that up.
Right, the model lab page. That's the the most public facing thing, piece of my work, I guess, for sure.
Honestly, it seems like it's something that everyone uses, but it never gets updated outside of that one update to beautify the graphics.
Right, it is. It's kind of in an interesting place there. You know, we put a lot of effort into that, and there's a lot of other ideas. I work a lot with Mike Ventries, who you probably see around on Twitter. And so he's the one that designed all the color scales for all those graphics, and then I just did the implementation, the dirty work, if you will. There's always a lot of ideas being passed around there. It's just a matter of priorities.
Well, it seems like the notice on there has said, we have an update coming. We'll post a notice. It's like 2011, or maybe it's now 2013. I don't know. but I really enjoy the website. It's funny because you could go to another website that has far more parameters and graphics, but that one is very easy to use. And it seems like everyone coalesces on that website when they want quick. I will say it's probably the fastest website of all of them, especially with the European.
Well, that's it's interesting. That's definitely the thing I've learned working in the energy group is speed is for us the most critical. I guess probably the second most critical. The first
that makes sense. I suppose since we have you on the spot, is the high-res European ever going to come to that website?
Possibly. I don't have a timeline for that.
Well, that's a good answer. It gives us some hope.
Stay tuned. I'll say that much.
I like the hard questions, Tyler.
We like to get answers.
I do. I like it. Devin, you kind of hit on this point that you don't work with, like, you know, the thing that drove you to Weather. I don't know this for sure. I'm speaking for you a little bit here, but for most people, it's because they're just fascinated with it, and it's like the big storms, the big events, and snow, severe weather. And we've had a lot of people on the show who, after they get their degree, don't actually do much with that, with like forecasting or whether it's researching that area. So I was wondering how you kind of balance that, because you obviously still love the weather and love that kind of stuff. What do you do kind of outside of your job to get that, fulfill that need?
Well, I listen to you guys. There's one. I follow plenty of weather accounts on Twitter there, and I'll I can't say I like actually sit down and forecast like
right. Okay,
but I try and stay on top of big weather stories. I think even though I'm not the only one in our group now, and I mean we have like obviously a number of meteorologists right literally in our same area at work, but it seems like at least among my team, if there's a weather question, it gets referred to me. So a forecast question. So I have to at least, stay somewhat on top of things for that.
Gotcha.
But just enjoying that.
Are you saying that you work with some people that are programmers but are not meteorologists?
Yeah, the majority. So we have the energy group at the weather company is really small. I think there's four engineers, including myself, and obviously there's some other team members involved in other areas, but the core engineering team is me and three other people, and there's one other person on our team who also has a meteorology degree. The other two have degrees in other things, either computer science or one is actually in a different science field, and I guess like us, has followed kind of the path into weather, weather and programming.
So I think we would all agree that Snapchat is a great way for learning about people's lives and what they're doing, but they may not necessarily post what they post on Snapchat in other places. I have seen that sometimes you work on maybe overnight shifts or shifts where you're kind of, what's it called, guarding the roost, kind of making sure things don't go haywire, and if they do, you have to fix them. Can you tell us a little bit about those coverage shifts? I don't even know what you would call them.
Sure. So we call them on-call shifts is the term. I guess it's kind of just like a doctor, the same yeah. idea as a doctor being on call. It's a pretty common occurrence in most software companies. Every couple of weeks I'll have an on-call shift where you are basically 24/7 support for all the services. Sometimes things will break in the middle of the night and you have to go fix it. So we have a operations team that kind of points out to us when things are broken or they get an issue come up, and so then we go in and fix it.
So that could be anything from model lab to even bigger things, like the RPM breaking, for example?
There's a lot of different groups within our company, and each of them, each group probably has, within their own engineering group, has their own set of on-call people. I wouldn't be responsible if the RPM broke. That would get referred to a different group, but okay. It all kind of works the same way.
So obviously, programming is a huge part of your job, but it's a huge part of a lot of meteorologists' jobs. I'm curious, when you were kind of on the job market, how important was that, having those skills, whether it's you know, Python, C++, Fortran. How important is that, you think, for young meteorologists going into the workforce to have those kind of skills?
I think it's super important. I think it's a, you know, it's one of the most fastest growing thing parts of meteorology. Like you said, it's really, it's not just things like I'm doing where you're specifically working as a software programmer, but really beyond that, you know, anything in the research, I'm sure you do a lot of programming for things.
Yeah.
In terms of like specific what languages might be more important than others, it kind of depends. I feel like for a lot of things, it depends on really what you get into. You know, if you, when you get to a company, you'll kind of work with whatever they are currently using. And similarly, if you're in grad school, you'll probably work with whatever either your mentor's using or things like that. So, you know, I think just having the fundamentals of how to program is probably more important than like knowing specific languages.
So what, do you have a favorite language? Just curious.
Well, a favorite language and then what I use a lot, I actually use a lot of Perl at work, but I kind of prefer Python. I think it's a little cleaner and nicer to use. But again, that kind of goes back to the you'll use whatever you need, whatever, you know, everyone else is using, I guess.
Yeah, whatever you use.
I'm on that train as well. I can kind of pick what I use, and Python is the way I go. But a lot of my model that I work with is in Fortran, and most of our models are in Fortran. I talk to computer scientists, and they're like, what's Fortran? Or like, you know, not exactly that, but like, you know, it's arcane and something that, you know, people don't, or at least computer scientists, it doesn't seem like they use it that much. I don't know if there's a gap there, a learning gap where we don't, it's in our model, so we have to learn it, but it doesn't mean we're going to use it all the time in our outside of model work.
Yeah, I mean, I think there's a lot of specific things. I'll be honest, I really don't know much Fortran myself. I've kind of somehow managed to avoid that. so I guess I'm out of the model development loop, but you know, that's how it is. I guess if I needed to, I could hopefully try and learn it. But yeah, no, there's a lot of, you know, things like Python are used like for everything. And then there are languages like that are very specific. You know, if you know Fortran, that's really helpful for weather models, or there's another language called COBOL that's really old and not super popular at all, but you basically have like guaranteed job security because it's used by like banks and you know, other really important industries, so you know, they need people that know that, so there's kind of that too, I guess.
I saw you posted recently that you got a MacBook Pro. Is that a new personal computer, or is that a work computer, and how have you handled the transition from a Windows computer that you had, I know you had at school, to now having a MacBook? And what do you have to say about it?
so that was a new work computer. That was part of our IBM transition there. We actually got to pick if we wanted a Windows or a Mac laptop. And I kind of, my justification for it was basically that I spend virtually my entire working day logged into Linux boxes. So I kind of, the Mac OS is just better for connecting with those, I guess. So that was honestly the primary reason I picked it, but I've enjoyed it.
You've enjoyed it, so that's good.
So I wanted to dive into kind of a different subject here, but I don't think we've had anyone on that actually works for the weather company, and we talked about it in our first episode about the Weather Channel and kind of the future of it and where it is now. But the Weather Company, Devin, correct me if I'm wrong, was acquired. At least their mobile and their cloud-based stuff, weather.com and Weather Underground, and WSI, where it was all purchased by IBM. And IBM has kind of promoted this acquisition as as a step forward in improving forecasts, because they're going to use, you know, their huge computers and data storage to make forecasts better than they've been. And I was curious what your take on it is, and where you see it going.
So you're correct. We, you know, the weather company, so WSI, Weather Underground, and weather.com were all acquired by IBM back in the end of January there. And really, it's the biggest kind of outcome for that is that it opens up kind of the world of weather and weather data, to be more specific, to a whole bunch of industries that IBM's already involved with or wants to get involved with. So, you know, weather affects virtually everything. I work in a very small part of it, but clearly, as you guys certainly know, weather affects virtually everything. And so a lot of this was just a way to kind of spread weather information to any industry you can think of, because in any likelihood, it's probably affected by weather in some way.
Hmm. So I've seen go ahead, Tyler.
The website that IBM has put out, and sometimes you can get a feel for how good something is going to be by either you know, the design of things. You kind of get the sense for, is it a well-oiled machine or is it not? And the sense I get from the IBM website is, wow, like, look at this. They're going to expand things and do things that have never been done before. That's the impression I get from looking at the website, where they talk about all these different weather-type things that they either are doing or want to do. So, perhaps has anything really changed since this acquisition?
I think things have certainly changed, maybe not for me personally so much, but certainly within the company in general. There's certainly been everyone at IBM that we've seemed to have met has been very receptive of us coming on board, I guess. And you know, everyone has ideas for how they can use weather in different applications. So I think you're right. It was definitely a, you know, you could get the sense that everyone was kind of excited about this happening. And you know, I think it is one of their bigger acquisitions, just not even in terms of, you know, financials and all that stuff, but just in terms of like people. Like, the weather company is about 1,000 people total. So that's a fairly large number of people to add. I mean, IBM is like 380,000 people, which is just a mind-blowing number, and it's been a big change for us, I think, just starting to learn the scale of IBM. But you know, it's big for them to gain all that new knowledge and all that new expertise all at once.
Have they started to, I guess, has the weather company started to use some of the resources that IBM has? Has that shift happened yet, or if not, when do you know when it's going to happen?
I think it's a work in progress. I mean, certainly IBM has a lot more resources in terms of being able to, you know, hire more people and you know, get into new industries and sell into new markets, things like that. So it's a transition process, definitely, but it's certainly started, I would say.
Gotcha. I'll be curious to see if we can actually see some, like, you know, concrete results, or like some sort of paper after IBM has been used as a full resource by the weather company. If the forecasts actually do improve, if their improvements have affected, you know, the energy business or insurance businesses, I'll be curious to see, you know, how that plays out.
So
now, what would you say is the most surprising thing that you have experienced since you started working professionally at WSI or now the weather company?
Most surprising thing.
Or exciting thing.
I think the exciting thing is just when you finally get a new product released and you you know, you get to see people start to use it, and maybe it's something like totally new or something that maybe you didn't even really realize before. I think, like I was mentioning before with the weighted degree days, you know, there was a point in that project where I was really, like, deep into figuring out how it all worked, and, like, at some point it just clicked, and I'm like, oh, not only do I understand how this works, but I understand why it works, how it works, and that was probably the coolest moment for me, was just like, oh, I completely understand this product the entire way through. So I think that was a cool moment.
Is there a lot of crossover between different projects? I'm assuming you have, you know, all these different projects going on at the same time. In terms of, like, teams, what kind of collaborative effort is there?
Yeah, I mean, we definitely work with other teams. Our energy group works very closely with the aviation group, which is a big part of the Weather Channel or the Weather Company, and has been historically probably one of the biggest parts of WSI. And so we work a lot with them. We have kind of similar tech stacks, so our platforms are built similarly. So we'll collaborate on things like that. One thing that's kind of new, and it's growing definitely, and I expect it to grow much more now as part of IBM, is the field of data science, which is kind of more predictive analytics. It's a little different than your classic weather model. There's some other tools in there, but I think data science is pretty cool as a field in general. And so we work there. We're setting up a data science team or several data science teams within the company, and so we work with them to create some products that way.
Gotcha. So Tyler had an interesting question for you. Completely off subject here. Tyler, I'll let you take it away.
Yes.
There.
Well, obviously we went to school together, so we know from off the show that you're from Western Pennsylvania, and you interned, correct? Yes, you interned at WSI, and now you work there. Explain to us how the transition of moving away from home to work has been.
It was a process, certainly. But, you know, I think you don't realize when you first get out of school, it's a bit of a culture shock, you know, especially coming from a big school like Penn State, where you could, like, walk down the street and make friends, basically. You know,
it's tougher, yes.
Yeah. You know, so especially moving to your own city, you know, a brand new city, and doing all that. You know, I think once you start to get involved and kind of learn the culture, I've tried to really learn some of the culture of the Boston area, which is easy because there's a huge culture in the Boston area for anyone that's spent any time here would know. So, you know, it was definitely a change. I enjoy when I get back home a couple times a year. You know, I think Western Pennsylvania will always be my home, but I've enjoyed exploring a new area,
yes,
too.
I read something the other day that said home will always be where you make it, but I think a lot of people would agree that it is always going to be where you grew up. Would you say the transition to college, Penn State, was tougher, or was the transition to Andover, Massachusetts, being farther away, tougher? Which one was tougher?
I think for me personally, the move to Andover to start, you know, a professional career in a totally different state was definitely tougher for me.
Interesting. The reason I'm so passionate about these questions is anyone that knows me knows that the transition to Penn State was exceptionally difficult. So that's why I'm particularly interested in knowing these answers. So thanks for answering.
I kind of echo what Devin said, because to me, it was like when you went to undergrad, everyone just was trying to make friends, and it was kind of hard to be, you know, kind of out of the loop. As long as you had some sort of participation, you know, you'd have a friend circle or you'd have a study group, and when you get a job, it's obviously a lot different. But for me in grad school, it was also different because, you know, everyone kind of, a lot of people have wives already, and a very different atmosphere. It's good nonetheless, though.
Well, yeah, and I imagine grad school is probably similar, too, where, you know, you have the same, like, probably your office mates, or I assume you have office mates there, you know, you see the same, like, five or so people, like, for hours on end a day, like, 5 days a week. So it's, you know, I love my team. I think they're all awesome people that I work with, and I'm really fortunate for that. But, you know, it is compared to school where you have, you know, different activities going on, you know, different classes every day even, it's a little different in that way.
Yeah, not as many people that you see every day. So to end the show, Devin, as you probably know it's coming, actually. we've talked a lot about programming and having those skills, but I want you to give us a non-programming piece of advice or skill that is most important for our younger audience.
I think I knew this was coming, as you said, so I have been thinking about it a little bit. And I think the advice I would give is never stop learning. And just you'll realize, this kind of actually ties in well to what we were just talking about there, but I think you really realize when you get out into the field, especially in meteorology, that, like, sure, you spent 4 years, like, explicitly studying meteorology, but then you get out there and you really have to apply it, and that's when you really learn important things. I think an example for me, I never really understood, like, I've heard of teleconnections, and I generally knew what they were, but I didn't really know what they were, and so I was able to learn it through a program here, and so, you know, I think just being able to realize that there's a lot that you don't know, and being able and willing to learn it is a huge skill to have.
Keep learning. I love that. All right. Well, thank you, Devin, for joining us tonight, and we hope to have you on sometime soon.
Sounds good. Thank you, guys.
Thanks, everyone, for listening tonight. That's going to be it. If you're not following us on Twitter already, you can follow us at the WX Junkies. We're also on Facebook. You can listen to this podcast on SoundCloud, YouTube, Stitcher, and iTunes. If you're listening on iTunes, go ahead and give us a rating or a review. We just want to hear from you. And Tyler, I'll let you send us off and maybe tease what we're going to do in the upcoming weeks.
Yes, for Devin, Dakota, and myself, thank you for listening. We hope you will join us right back here next Thursday evening. We will be talking about severe weather. Severe weather season getting going slowly, I'll bet. But we will be talking about severe weather again Thursday evening, hopefully 8 o'clock. We will announce the details once we have them on Twitter and Facebook. But that does it for this episode. We will see you next week.